thank you so much for joining Dental Marketing Theory, a podcast by Gary Bird. In today's episode, Gary talks with Dr. Leonard Tao. Gary and Dr. Lin discuss the importance of your online reputation and how you can use it to your advantage. As always, please make sure to like, subscribe, share, and leave a comment, as all of those things really help to get the word out about Dental Marketing Theory. Hope you enjoy today's show.
All right, Dr. Len, we are live. Thanks so much for coming on today. Before I jump into the questions, if you are listening right now, just take a moment and leave a review below. It doesn't matter if you're on social media, if you're on a streaming platform, leave a review. It really helps. I know that this is white noise and you're going to try to ignore it. Please, please, please don't make me beg. Go leave a review really quick. Today, I'm excited. I got Dr. Len here. Dr. Len, I want to go over just quickly, like from my perception looking in, right? Because you got a lot of cool stuff going on, what you have going on. So number one, you're a dentist. So you have a practice that you are actively practicing in. Number two, you are you built out a review product and that eventually got bought up by a company that you now work at as well, that has a really cool service. And then you're also an author in the space as well. Tell me what I got right, tell me what I got wrong, and tell me what I left out.
Well, thank you for having me, first of all. So I am a dentist. I am no longer a practice owner. I sold my practice October 1st of 2021.
Oh.
I actually moved to Florida in October of 2020, and I commuted to my office. I'm still actually commuting, so I'm still wet-fingered. I'm still practicing dentistry, but I will be done completely at the end of December this year, 2022, when I will stop practicing dentistry at that point. So,
got it. So, you're practicing at someone, you're like an associate at someone else's practice, basically?
I'm an associate in my former office.
Got it. So, okay, perfect. Okay. And could you talk a little bit about that transition?
The transition from owner to associate?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I actually have thought about having a podcast called Tales from the Other Side, which I thought would be an interesting type of podcast. So basically, I didn't know how it would be. I was an owner for 15 years. I was an associate prior. The new owner of my practice was my associate. So we reversed roles, and we had a very good relationship. She joined me in August of 2020 during COVID, when my previous associate left and went back to Austin, mm-hmm. Texas. So she joined with no intention of buying the practice, but then realized that it was a really good practice and bought it. And we closed on it in October of 2021, as I said. I wasn't sure how the transition was going to be, but it's been the smoothest thing I've ever imagined happening. I've had zero stress. I go in, I'm a worker bee now. I go in and work my couple days a week. So I fly up to Philadelphia from Florida on Monday. I work Monday and Tuesday and then fly home Tuesday evening. We had always had office hours on Tuesday evening till 8 o'clock. And when she came in, she waited 6 months because she's an owner 6 months now. And then literally she stopped working evening hours. So now I work 8 to 5 on Monday, or 9 to 5 on Monday and 8 to 4 on Tuesday. I leave Tuesday evening and I go home. So that's my schedule. Obviously I allude to a lot of traveling for other things, but the point is that the transition has been better than I could have imagined. The patients love the new owner. She's running the practice very effectively. And I decided, towards the beginning of May that I was going to end the end of this year versus working until July of 2023, which was the original plan. Mm-hmm. So as of December of this year, I will no longer do dentistry. But the biggest thing I've found is that I when I'm not doing dentistry, when I'm not there, I don't even think about it. It's become such a stress release. Not that I have a very stressful life when I was the owner, but I have no stress now. And I just enjoy life a lot more not being the owner of the practice.
That's awesome. So obviously we hear about everybody, you know, acquiring practices, and we got groups that are building practices, and you just don't hear a lot about that other side. And with something that I've personally never heard of, I know it's happened before, but I just haven't talked to anybody, is someone coming in as an associate and then kind of growing up. I have heard of it like inside of families and things like that, and that's a little bit different. So she just adopted all of your processes and all that good stuff. So that way it was just like a really smooth transition.
Yeah. So she, when she was actually on, it's really interesting. So I put the practice up for sale January of 2020, prior to COVID. She and a friend of hers were actually the first people to come to look to buy the practice. COVID then hit. And obviously it shut down the world, it shut down the practice sale. And then my associate left in June of 2020 during COVID. And she came back to me after having a baby and said, you know what, I want to be an associate. Would you take me on as your associate rather than buying the practice? And I was like, sure, I need an associate because I wasn't working full time anymore. And so she joined me again with no intention of buying the practice, but a potential to buy it. She grew up as a dentist and she grew up as a business owner potential, and then decided to make an offer and I sold it to her without any second guess because it was the easiest transition. All the team knew her very well. I have a very small team. We had one front desk, two dental assistants, one hygienist, and it was just a very much easier transition to sell to someone who they already knew than to have to bring in someone with no ties to the practice at all.
So tell me how you went from you're a dentist, so you're practicing, and then you decided to create a software or a SaaS product. How did that happen?
So I bought a practice in 2007. I bought the practice in 2007 from a dentist who committed suicide, unfortunately. I always say their misfortune was my fortune because I bought a great practice. I bought it. I bought the building, gutted the building, rebranded the practice, made it my own, but needed to drive new patients to my practice. And it came down to the fact that I was not trusting or not happy with the companies I had hired to help me. So I went out and tried a lot of things on my own. I didn't do billboards. I didn't do yellow pages. I did the online marketing. That's what I was all about, was online marketing. And I started to do things that really worked well. And I was asked to teach on it. So I was giving, that's how I got into speaking, was I was asked by a local dentist in Philadelphia
who asked you to
teach a study club how to do marketing on their own. And that's what I did. So during my sessions in Philadelphia, I would get calls literally from the room in the back. Len, hi, this is so-and-so doctor. I'm watching your seminar. I need you to help me. I'm like, I'm not helping you. I'm a dentist. I need to pay my bills. I was $18,000 in debt every month. That was my nuts to pay back with the loan I took out. I wanted to be aggressive. I did it in 7 years. And I kept on getting requests from dentists to do consulting with them. So I said, you know what? If I get the request, I'm going to do it. So I created a consulting company called iSocial Dental Consulting. That was the name of the consulting company. And I started doing in-office consulting, marketing consulting with these clients while I was still practicing dentistry. But I didn't love that consulting model. So I said, I need to come up with another model. So I said, you know what?
Yeah, because the online
reviews were so important.
Real quickly, before you move on from that, did you not like the consulting model because it's similar to the dental model where it's like basically you have to be involved in everything?
Exactly. Yeah. And I couldn't control. I would make recommendations to do certain types of marketing and the dentist wouldn't do it. So the consulting didn't work if they didn't follow my plan to like a T. Because I created something called the Tao template, which is the breakdown of everything they need to be doing for a practice. So, but if they didn't follow it, it didn't work. So it just wasn't, I didn't enjoy it. So, but I knew how reviews had played a huge factor in generating new patients for me. It was a huge factor. And I said, you know what? There's a lot of products on the market that aren't very good. I'm going to see if I can create something that's better. And I did. So I created a product called iSocial Reviews. It was a manual-based email and text messaging product where there was no integration with the software. And I went to my first trade show in January of 2013. And it was the Yankee Dental meeting. I called the Yankee Dental meeting up and said, I have no money. I want to basically give me remnant space at the trade show. And they have, so what is unique about Yankee is they have like a flea market in the back where they sell sheets, they sell bamboo stuff, they sell pillows, they sell jewelry. I said, just stick me in there. Just give me a place so I can get in. And they gave me a decent booth space and they didn't charge me the full amount of money. They treated me like a startup business. And I had 9 dentists buy it the very first meeting I went to. Wow. And I knew I was onto something. Went to a second trade show, sold 11, went to a third one, sold another 10 more. After a year and a half of doing this, I had 180 dentists underneath me who bought my software from me. And back then it was like $497 a month. It was expensive.
Ooh.
And Bird Eye got wind of me, they wanted to grow in dental and they needed someone to basically grow their dental division. And they hired me, they acquired me. They bought my company from me. They didn't want my IP, although some of the things that were in my software are now in BirdEye because of me. But they acquired me. I'm in charge of the dental division now. I've been with them 8 years. And we have just under 9,700 clients who use us now. So we've grown from 220 combined to over 9,600 now. So it's been I look back and I can't believe it. I have emails I sent my way. Yeah, I'm starting a company. And now we are, BirdEye just raised a Series C round of $60 million a few weeks ago. So it's pretty amazing. I'm not the owner. People call me the BirdEye guy. They think I'm an owner. I'm not an owner. I am an employee of BirdEye, but I'm the face of BirdEye. I mean, that's what it is. The dental face of BirdEye is what I really am. So it's been unique growth of everything within my life, to be honest with you.
So what's your day-to-day? Because obviously I talk to dentists all the time. There's a lot of entrepreneurial dentists out there who are like, they're trying to do what you've done. And what does your day-to-day look like now that you built something that you love, that you knew you were passionate about? It wasn't dentistry. You figured out really, really quickly, this is not the right road because this is similar to dental. So you created the product. The product was acquired. And now you're working for them. What does your day-to-day look like now with that and leaving dentistry out of it? Because I know you're transitioning out of that. How does that look and feel?
So I'm an advisor to a number of companies. So I do, because I do very well at trade shows. I understand the trade show model. I understand how to get sales at trade shows, which is difficult for some companies. I'm on the board of like five different companies now. I assist them with growth, connecting with dentists. I have a big influence. I run a podcast called the Raving Patients Podcast, which I record a lot of episodes. I have a Facebook group that I monitor called Raving Patients as well. I've written a couple books. I spend a lot of my day consulting with dentists still, because I still do consulting, but just a different way now. And I work for BirdEye, so I'm on calls with dentists, teaching them about how important reviews are, teaching value propositions when it comes to reviews, and ultimately selling them our product, which I still do because I'm the only rep at BirdEye who sells to dental. I own that space, basically.
So you said you're on the board of several companies. Can you talk about that? Are you allowed to talk about what board you're on, what you do there?
I'd rather not, but I basically help them acquire new clients. I help them with connections within the dental industry because I know a lot of people and a lot of people know me. So I use my influence, I guess you can say, but also my sales acuity to help those companies grow as well. And some of them are pre-revenue, so some of you wouldn't even know who they are. Yeah. So I test out the products in my office or what was my office to see if it's actually working. So I'm a beta tester for a lot of things as well.
Oh, that's cool. That is really, really cool.
But you mentioned something that's really important. You mentioned, about finding a passion outside dentistry. And that was what the issue was. I became passionate about other things. I love dentistry. I still love it when I go treat patients now as the associate, but I'm not passionate about it. I'm passionate about reviews. I'm passionate about, helping practices grow. I'm passionate about helping people. I help people so many times. I get messages every single day from people that I talk to when they have a problem with their online reviews. That's what I became passionate about. That's why I decided to end my dental career. But the other thing I'm passionate about is speaking. And I've spoken well over 500 times. The concept I teach or the value propositions I teach are very important. And I know so much about the topics that I speak about. I don't do clinical dentistry. I teach marketing. So that's where I spend a lot of my time. I've spoken this year alone probably over 20 times, and we're just into May at this point. I have another 24 or 25 seminars this year that I'm giving.
Wow. That's awesome.
So that's where my passion is. It's helping practices, speaking, talking about online reviews and ranking and getting more new patients in there. That's really what it comes down to.
So obviously you were passionate about dentistry at one point though, right?
I was. So when I first bought my practice, I thought I was in the top of the world. I had a great practice. Yeah. I had gutted the building. I had a brand new facility. I mean, it was like living the dream. But I always say I built the practice of my dreams. But I wasn't living the life of my dreams. And yeah.
I want to talk about this. It's really, really important, I think. So especially people in transition, I have found that I was passionate about things and changing and growing things, right? And so I'd be like, if I could just do this, I'd be really happy and I'd get to do just that. And then I was like, I don't want to do that anymore. And I found for me, I like to grow and figure out things that aren't working and get them working. And then I'm bored with them. And then I want to go on to the next thing. And so I have found that these are the things that I like to do. And I'm just going to keep cycling those through. I know some people struggle with that though. Like, wait, I said I wanted this and now I got it and I don't. Now I want something else. How did you reconcile that and go through that from, okay, I love dentistry. I got the thing of my dreams. Now I want to go do this over here. And this is what I'm really passionate about. How did that transition happen?
So I recognized very quickly after buying the practice, I love being an owner. I love the practice, but I didn't enjoy the time I was spending in the office. I was making a very nice living. I really was. We were doing well. The practice grew significantly from 2010 to 2013. I mean, I went from doing $1.2 million to $2.4 million a year in production. We were a very busy office and a fee-for-service practice. So I was really acquiring high-value patients. But I wasn't enjoying it. I was spending too much time in the practice. I was there every Friday because we didn't work Fridays. I was there every Friday doing the books and doing this. So what I did was I started to delegate things. I had my bookkeeper handle my books. I had, you know, my dental assistants do extra things. And I was able to get away from the practice and realized I did not enjoy working the time I was working all the time in the office. So I knew that, you know, I bought the practice 15 years ago. I'm 48. So I was 33 years old. I said, I can't do this like some dentists can until they're 75 and 80. I was just at CDA last week and I met a dentist who's 82 years old and still working. And I could not imagine being 33 years old and working another 50 years in the field. Yeah. So I knew that I needed to find something that would be able to replace dentistry eventually. And that's what I did. I literally found another passion and believe me, it's all hard work. It wasn't that I just did something. Yeah. And it was took a lot of time out of my life. I always say I did miss a lot of my son's childhood. My son is 15 years old. And I didn't miss a lot of the things that he was able to do because I was on the road a lot. Prior to COVID, just in 2019, I was on the road 46 out of 52 weeks. So, wow. I mean, it took a lot of time out of my life to be able to do the things I'm doing now. But the hard work pays off significantly.
Yeah. And then what you said you're really big on the value proposition. Do you like speaking about that? Could you just speak a little bit about that today?
Yeah. So look, I always say the online reviews are the foundation to doing anything on marketing. And you have to have a good foundation before you go ahead and spend money on marketing. Because if you don't have enough reviews, people aren't going to come in your office. Even if you're doing a lot of marketing and spending money on marketing. So the reviews are the foundation, and as well as getting you ranked and listed on search engines for people to find you, all those things make you more visible and credible. And when you get to that point, you then can not only gain the benefit from the reviews, but also unlocks the key to do more marketing. So a practice that has 6 reviews, I tell them, you know what, don't do Google AdWords right now because you're wasting your money. Wait till you get 50 or 75 reviews. Then you can save the money, spend the money you save, and that effect will have greater effect on the marketing you're doing. So that's a lot of the value propositions I teach. The fact that you have to ask for reviews, people are just not going to give them to you. You know, and obviously we have an automated service that does that. So we make it really easy for practices to do. And that's really what I literally in a 2.5 hour seminar, I mentioned Bird Eye for like 2.5 minutes. I mean, I don't really sell Bird Eye from the stage. I teach a value and why you need to be doing this. And it really hits home with them as to why they need to refocus. I call it, they have to reinvent themselves and they have to reinvent themselves with something called reputation marketing, which is a little different way of looking at things.
Yeah, it is. And I love what you said there. So I think most people understand in the day and age that we live, like it's better to have 50 reviews than 5 reviews, right? How do you feel about, and I've seen this a lot, is people will have, you might have 100 reviews, right? And you're like, oh, you have 100 reviews. That's great. But everybody else in your market has 500 reviews, right? And so, and then in another market, you might have 50 reviews, but everybody else has 4. So the 50 is actually crushing everybody, but the 100 is actually losing. What's your thoughts on that?
I get that question a lot. I get, how many reviews do we actually need? That's a very common question I get. And I always say it's very dependent on the market you're with. And that's exactly the point you just made. Mm-hmm. If you have 150 reviews, you look great. But if your competitor has 450, you don't look good. Whereas if you're in a town of 10 dentists and you have 75 and that's the most, you look the best. So it's 100% dependent on geographic and where you're located, how many dentists there are, the competition. That's the key. And I always look at, one of the things I do is I look up a search for dentist in their town, which is the most common search I can do for a dentist. And where do they rank on the map? Are they number 1? Are they number 2? Are they number 10? Are they number 20? Where do you rank? And why are offices ranking above you? because that's who people are going to be searching for or looking at when they're searching or and finding you. So 100%. So it's very much a geographic dependent choices or answer to see how well you're doing. It's really depending on how your competition does.
Got it. Yep. That's exactly, I feel the same. So question on your book. I know you have a book that you just launched. What, tell me a little bit about that.
So I have a first book I wrote in 2019 called Raving Patients, which is a lot of the foundational stuff, why you need reviews, the advantage of them, why you need consistent listings. I've spoken to many dentists over the years. I've spoken to many patients over the years. And I started to write down tips as to ways to get reviews. So the book is called, and it's right here, it's called 100 Plus Tips for Getting 100 Five-Star Reviews in 100 Days. So there are actually 125 tips. About 100 of them are ones I have come up with. 25, I went to certain, experts in the space, some dentists, some marketing people, and asked them for their best tip. So they're called power tips. Those are called power tips. So they're in the book as well. But I broke down kind of foundationally what you have to do, some neat ways to generate reviews, using QR codes, how to promote the reviews on your TV in the office. So there's all these different ways that I talk about being able to generate more reviews to help increase everything else that you're doing online. So it's a tip book. So it's a very easy read. You can probably read it in less than a day, but it's gotten really great feedback from the people who've read it. And so.
So it's like to stimulate you, right? So it's like, you're not going to execute on all 100 ideas. Obviously you're going to go through and be like, ooh, I really like this one and this one and this one. And then now you have all the ammunition.
Exactly right. You're not going to implement all 100. You're not going to implement all 100, but you could take 10 of them. Like literally, I just gave a seminar in Chicago on April 29th, and I sent a couple of the books to the people before I started. One of the guys had already read a couple of the tips and already implemented a couple of them in his office before the meeting even started.
Got it. That's awesome. So changing gears on you, what are your thoughts right now on either from the perspective, you can answer this either from the perspective of a practice owner and transitioning as an associate or as a working inside of Bird Eye. What are your thoughts on the consolidation that's happening right now inside of dentistry?
So the consolidation you're talking about with like DSOs purchasing smaller practices and solo practitioner model.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was not a candidate for a DSO sale because I was not sticking around. So I knew that I needed to find a solo dentist who wanted to stay a solo dentist rather than go to a large organization because I was not a good candidate for them. Look, I think in some aspects it's good for dentistry. I think in some aspects it's bad for dentistry. I think if you're in the right position, originally had the thought of selling my practice back in 2014, which was my heyday. I was doing $2.5 million, very profitable. I then started to spend so much time on the road and I brought in an associate who took insurance. So my practice was half fee for service, half insurance. And it really hurt the value of the practice. When my old associate left and the new one came on, we got rid of all the insurances and we were back to being a full fee for service practice. So in 2014, I probably could have sold to a DSO and stayed around for a while, and I would have maximized the value of my practice. But obviously, I chose not to because I was really too young at that point, in my opinion. I was 41 years old then. Do I regret it? Not really, but would it have been a better decision? Possibly. But I think a lot of the DSOs have not so good of a name in the industry. They are, they're very much relying on how much they're producing or how much they're collecting. It's more a bit less about the patient care. I have a very different aspect of things. I want to focus on the highest quality of care. I want to wow the patients. So I think there's some good and some good, there's some good things about it and there's some bad things about it.
Got it. And so what are the, like outside of getting, them being able to buy your practice for maybe more than the private guy, what are some of the good things that you think the DSOs are doing? Like, what are they bringing to the dental space that's helping the industry as a whole?
Well, I think they're basically taking practices that may not be surviving per se, and they're acquiring them. And they have most of these DSOs are systems that are put in place, and the system is repetitive. And they're taking practices that maybe would close or would never be interested by a private buyer, and they're rejuvenating them and they're making them a better practice, specifically from a collections and production standpoint. A lot of DSOs are better than others, but I think that's one of the biggest advantages of DSOs is they're rescuing practices from or allowing people to retire or stay on for a short period of time, and they're not just closing their practice down. So I think that's a positive. I think that we're looking at very smart entrepreneurs who know how to run businesses, and that's what DSOs bring to the table most of the times, is that system in place. And I have a relationship with a couple of DSOs where they've talked to me about potentially future coming on it from a dental perspective and helping them. So I'm just learning the DSO model. I'm not an insurance practice, so I don't understand the insurances like the typical DSO does, because I never took insurance. So, understanding the PPO model is not something I'm very familiar with, because I was a fee-for-service practice.
Yeah, that's a big part of it, for sure. What, changing gears on you again, let's go back to some of the strategy stuff. How do you deal with offices? When I first started in marketing, one of the things that I had to get questions about all the time was, I just got a bad review, right? And they were like, delete it. And I'm like, it doesn't work that way. I can't just go delete them. It's fake, or it's, you know, they're not telling the whole story. And then they would want to go in and be like, I'm going to post this and this and this. I'm like, well, you can't do that, because HIPAA is like a thing, right? You can't go tell a bunch of stuff and say, let me tell my side of the story. It's not a court trial. How do you walk people through that and walk them off the cliff on that side?
So it's funny. I have a class called, Oh My God, I Got a Bad Review. What do I do? So this is a very common thing I get. So number one, every dentist is going to get a bad review. In fact, I tell people when they say to me, I got a bad review, I said, is it your first one? A lot of times they say yes. And I tell them, congratulations, you're officially a dentist because you have your first bad review. You haven't done enough dentistry if you don't have a bad review. Unfortunately, that's the way it is. Okay.
Yeah.
I also think that bad reviews are good for business in many ways. Unless something goes viral. So recently, as the time of recording this, there was an incident that took place at a practice in Phoenix, a pediatric practice, where someone was recording the dentist and his attitude and his response to a problem that the patient presented. I think the kid had a little lesion on his skin from something that happened in the office, and it went viral. And within a day, they had 1,000 bad reviews on their Google My Business page, or what's called the Google profile now. Google has now taken most of those reviews down, just so you know. But those were a lot of fake reviews, because there was an incident that has occurred that put them into a viral situation. Your typical one doctor or small practice, you know, that gets a bad review, they always say it's a fake because they don't have patients of that name. And if you know, look, when I go to a business that had a bad experience, I have a couple of alias email accounts that I use to write the review, because I may want to go back to the business and I don't want to put my real name out there. So a lot of the bad reviews that you may get are from people who are actually patients, but they're using a fake name. It's not a fake review. So as a solo practice, when someone says, well, I got a fake review, I'm like, well, I don't think it's fake. I just think you don't know who the patient is. So just keep that in mind as well. Now, when it comes to dealing with the bad reviews, I always like to say, relax, calm down, take a deep breath for a good 20 minutes, because you probably won't care after that. Okay. It's very important not to let a bad review spoil your day. It's going to hurt. It's going to suck. But a lot of times you can learn something from the bad review that you get. So I don't want most practices responding online unless they know for a fact that the patient isn't nuts. Because if you have a nutty patient, the patient can re-respond to your response and make it look a whole lot worse. So I'd rather practices take it offline, try to reach out to the patient to fix their concern or issue if they know who they are. And hopefully they want to take the review down, which I've done many, many times. And it's worked successfully at getting the review from a 1-star back to a 5-star. So that's how I recommend dealing with it. If they want to respond, I like a generic response. I don't like anything specific. You can't violate HIPAA. So you can't, you know, argue with them. You can't acknowledge them technically as a patient. Okay. So you have to be very careful how you do it. So I like generic responses when it comes to responding to a review. But you know, if you do respond, you definitely want to say you're sorry. Definitely want to say you're sorry. Because even if you're not, because the response that you're putting out there is intended for the people reading the reviews, not to the person who wrote the reviews.
Yeah, 100%. And I think too, there's a generational shift that's happening. Especially in people who shop a lot online. I know for me, I shop almost exclusively online. So I read reviews, and I've been burnt by review sites so many times, right? Amazon's a good example of this, where it's like, I buy something because it had 40 billion 5-star reviews. And then I get it and I'm like, this is a piece of garbage. Like, not that I got a bad one, but just the product is literally horrible. And I go back and I look and I'm like, okay, this is totally fake, right? And so I'm trained. I actually read negative reviews. And then what I'm looking for is how the office responds to those negative reviews. And I actually do this for restaurants. I do this for a lot of different kinds of businesses because it tells me a lot about the business, right? If the business goes defense, 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 it's all your fault, then it's like, okay, that tells me something about them. Where if they're like, if they take ownership, I can tell when someone's, everybody can tell if someone's crazy, right? Like, we know if a patient's being crazy, but if you take ownership and you say, hey, we're sorry you had that experience and we're sorry that you went through that. You know, our goal here is to do this. We're going to reach out to you and try to get this straightened out. I know right away if I have a problem, they're going to treat me well, right? Like, they're going to help me work through it. And that's all people, you've been in business forever. I've been in business. I've had angry clients. You've had angry clients. Everybody's had angry patients. It's all about how you're going to respond to that. It's not a matter as if you're going to have angry patients or not, or angry customers or not. It's how do you respond to it, and are you there to help them? And I think those negative reviews really, really, really help with that. I think it helps big time. And I totally agree with you on the front of, you know, it's really the foundation of all of your marketing, that and your website. I mean, that's everything. So any advice that you would give to offices out there that are trying to scale? So I have a lot of the people that listen to us are like three locations. They want to go to 10, or they're at 10. They want to go to 20, or so on and so forth. What's your advice from a marketing perspective for those kind of groups?
Well, it's the same. Make sure you have reviews. Make sure the practices that you're acquiring have a foundation of reviews that are not zero or not bad. You know, buying a practice with a bad reputation doesn't look that good. It's very hard to recover from a bad reputation. And you want to, when you buy these practices, you have goodwill and you want to use that goodwill. You know, if they're starting from scratch again, foundationally they have to do, but it really depends what the goal of their marketing is. Look, the primary goal of marketing for most people, in my opinion, is to make more money. That's what the primary goal is. You know, if you want to attract specific type of patients, those high value patients, Invisalign, implants, you know, those cosmetics, those types of things, I truly believe you have to go to paid advertising to get those patients to know that you do these procedures. So there's a Google AdWord campaign. There should be a Facebook funnel campaign directing people to your potential practice or to your practice for these potential procedures. I'm not a big fan of just generic social media. Like, I don't think social media without paying for it is going to drive patients to a practice. They're going to inform the patient about what you do, but I don't think there's a huge ROI with just social media. And when you pay for ads on Facebook, to me, that's not social media, it's paid advertising. So I think, exactly. I think the foundation, having a great website, is so important. Like, you have to have a website with interaction. You have to have call to actions. You have to have specifically what a person is looking for in there. Don't make it like a brochure, because they're not going to stay on there. Having the reviews, having the great website, and then doing the paid advertising is probably the best way to help scale these practices.
That's awesome. Yeah, I totally agree with you. Anything that I forgot to ask you on this podcast you'd like to talk about?
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, people ask me like, what should they not do when it comes to reviews, which is there's a lot of misconceptions or myths when it comes to generating reviews. What's the best way to do it? What's not, what are you not allowed to do? For instance, you can't incentivize for a review. So giving a patient some type of incentive to leave a review on Google or Yelp is completely against the rules. And if they find out, your reviews will be taken down. So that's one thing. Can you have a kiosk in the office collecting reviews? Absolutely not. Simply because of IP address conflicts. And now with location services that are active on a phone, they don't want them being left in your physical location. So don't get it in the office. I tell a story that I had a practice reach out to me. They were generating new reviews. They saw them appear on their Google My Business page, but their number wasn't increasing and they didn't know why. So I did some research and I asked them how they're collecting them, and they didn't think many people were doing them. They didn't offer free Wi-Fi in their office like some practices do. But I ended up doing the research, and they happen to have a McDonald's and a Starbucks in their center, which both have free Wi-Fi. And people were actually logging onto those Wi-Fis multiple times to leave the reviews. So what Google was seeing was the same IP address that they were getting them from. And they were showing those reviews, but they were also taking old ones down to the same point. So their number never went up. So you don't want to collect them in the office. You can incentivize, like I said, I would incentivize a team member for reviews instead. Yeah. I would ask your team to really be focused, maybe incentivize them with either a per review incentive or like a total number of incentives for the number of reviews for the office. That's how I would do that. I would not pay a patient for a review. You can't do it. And I would never sue a patient for a bad review. I think that's completely crazy. No, I literally, you won't believe this. I spoke in Anaheim at the CDA. I gave a seminar called, "Oh my God, I got a bad review. What do I do?" So I gave all the reasons why. And I had a woman come up to me and says, "I got this really bad review. I'm suing a patient." I'm like, "Why? Why?" Because it was demeaning. It was libel. It was slander. I'm like, "Why did you sue her? It's very easy. Just get more positives." "Well, I want that negative taken down." I'm like, "Get more positives." But was all she can say. I'm like, "There's no buts here. You don't sue a patient." And I said, "Why? Because once it becomes public, I will talk about you all over the country as to not doing it. So do not sue a patient. That's the stupidest thing you can do."
I've literally had Dennis tell me that exact. I've literally had that happen to people I've worked with, other people I knew in the industry. They're like, "I'm suing them." I'm like, that is literally the worst thing that you can do. So if you didn't get anything from this podcast, don't sue your patients. I'm gonna get that on a t-shirt. Don't sue your patients. So that's a really good one. Well, last question for you: if someone wants to reach out to you, learn more about either get your book or learn more about reviews or connect with you in any way, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
So I'm super active on social media. So I have a Facebook page. I have an Instagram page. Everything's under Dr. Len Tau, DrLenTau. They can reach out to Bird Eye if they have questions about Bird Eye. I'm happy to give my email and my cell phone number because it's all over the place anyway. So my cell phone number, if you have any questions, is 215-292-2100. And it is everywhere online. And my email, the best email is probably Len, L-E-N, at drlentau.com. And what I'll do, I'll throw it out there. I have my first book in digital format that I can offer for free at no cost. So if anybody wants my first book called Raving Patients, just send me an email. Tell me that you heard about me on this podcast with Gary, and I'll send you a free copy of my book that's a digital version.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for coming on today. You did a great job.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me, Gary. I appreciate it.